And now, sports and other stuff. The Closers. Join the talk now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
Strike him out. The Cardinals hold on for the win. Rosenthal to save. Martinez, his first win of the year.
Ground ball up the middle. Cologne, he's coming home. And dropping the ball is Butera.
Rebound for Edmondson. They score! Joel Edmondson does it again. Available puck. Neal with a shot. He scores!
We had one game where we've had more power plays than them, and the other three, they're winning that category.
Left-hand dribble, loads up a triple. Money in the bank for Draymond Green.
Back to Isaiah, pull-up, got it!
And he goes to his watch, man! He went to his watch for Isaiah time!
Behind the net, centering pass with Buck, comes back to the bumper, can they score?
He's been diagnosed with a concussion. He will be out for tomorrow's game.
Much appreciated by Boston Red Sox and MLB getting ahead of it. So I appreciate the sentiments.
I mean, that's stuff that you don't do. Get thrown out of my head. Get thrown out everywhere. I've lost my respect for the organization.
Hey, welcome in. Hour number two of the Closers. Here are our opening montage. Fox Sports Midwest, Royals Radio Network, NBC Sports Net, the Warriors Radio Network, the Celtics Radio Network, and the Baltimore Orioles, both Adam Jones and Manny Machado, with decidedly differing opinions on that Red Sox organization. Adam happy, Manny bleep you, basically, to the Red Sox organization. I'm George Young, again, Jay Sparks, and from Rock M Nation and the SB Family of Nations, Mr. Bill Connolly alongside. How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing well. We are doing well. Let's start with the start here for college football. The $11 million man down in T-Town, Nick Saban, signing the deal. Is he worth that amount of money, or did Alabama just get totally googly-eyed and stupid?
Well, I think the question is just that, is anybody worth that? Because if anybody is, then, I mean, it's Saban. He has one of the, with the computer rankings I use and whatnot, I mean, he has one of the two best teams in the country every single year and has for almost a decade, and that's not supposed to happen. Every dynasty that you think of, there are at least down years where you're at least maybe you're only the sixth best team in the country or something like that. They are ridiculously successful, ridiculously consistent. And, with the economic boost that probably brings to the city of Tuscaloosa and the state of Alabama, then you could probably make the case. I mean, again, if anybody, though, some of that money could go to players or to things that would eventually go to players or whatever. I don't think anybody would complain, but it makes sense that he's that high.
Okay. Now, in light of what happened at ESPN last week with the major bloodletting and all the talent and a lot of it because ESPN is tethered to cable and cable revenues are down, does the bubble burst for salaries like that? I mean, you got Konzo Martin with $3 million for 7 years. You've got Nick Saban with the $11 million deal this year. All those numbers. Does the bubble burst?
Well, I mean, there are a couple of things. First of all, boosters can still step up to the table pretty well if they need to. So there's that. And the other thing is, the bubble bursting, it's probably going to come down to some, but to what degree kind of depends on how quickly people figure out the streaming thing. If ESPN figures out a good model for making money off of streaming in the next couple of years, then nothing has to burst. Deals will get rearranged in terms of the technicalities of network of the SEC network and all that. But in theory, eventually when a new technology comes about, you figure out how to make money off of it. And if ESPN figures that out, then in a couple of years, they might be doing okay. They are dying right now, or they're hurting right now because of cord cutting, but people are cord cutting and moving to streaming options. And if you make money off that, you're fine.
Is there some kind of like reverse knife edge here? If you're making eight figures a year, how many football games are you allowed to lose when people stare at an eight figure salary?
I mean, probably no more than you're already allowed to lose at the University of Alabama, which is about no more than two in any given year. So yeah, I mean, if this was, you know, maybe Jim Harbaugh or somebody who hasn't had quite the same level of success, but clearly has a good reputation. Tom Herman, if Texas had gone out and it had taken $10 million a year to get Tom Herman to Texas and they had done it, then yeah, I mean, the pressure there starts immediately. But I mean, this is Alabama, this is Nick Saban. There, I think the understanding is already pretty clear in terms of how much he's supposed to be winning and is winning.
And an awful lot. Bill Conley, Rock M Nation with us here on The Closes. The NFL draft got done, and all the numbers, all the number crunching is coming out, and one of the numbers that was out there was, hey, Alabama as a school had more defensive guys drafted than the Big 12 did as a conference. Now, we all know the Big 12 doesn't play defense, so that really shouldn't surprise anybody. But on a greater scale, Bill, as conference realignment has kind of settled down for a little bit, except for one, as we'll get to in a minute, is the Big 12 in that much trouble when they can't get people to the next level?
Yeah, well, I mean, it can hurt recruiting. It certainly holds you back in that regard. I think it's kind of a retrospective thing, the draft is. Like, you know, Missouri only having one guy picked. Well, Missouri went 4-8 last year, so that kind of makes sense. It's not a indictment of anything moving forward necessarily. It's just one more confirmation that maybe Missouri didn't have enough experienced talent last year. And so I think it's the same thing with the Big 12. We saw it on the field. They were the worst power conference in the country. They weren't worse. I mean, they had fewer picks than the AAC. They weren't worse than the AAC. It just means that, you know, the talent cycling through was either young or not really in existence. And I think it was a combination of the two. So Big 12's got issues. There's no question about that. The draft thing, though, is more of a perceptions battle, or PR battle. And there's no question the Big 12 has lost a lot of those, and they lost another one over the weekend.
Bill Conley, Rock M Nation, SB Family of Nations. You can follow him on Twitter at SBN underscore Bill C. Is there another conference realignment underway? I mean, you had Wichita State leaving for the AAC, and maybe Memphis is making eyes?
Yeah, I mean, you never. I think the next big round of conference realignment. We did hear something. You know, it made the Feinbaum level earlier today, and or yesterday, or whenever that was. Where, you know, because most likely because the Big 12 didn't do very well in the draft, all the chatty Cathys who make money and pay money at OU are starting to plant seeds that they're unhappy with the Big 12, and so all those rumors start again. But that's really the next step. You know, there will be smaller moves about, you know, Conference USA or AAC or whatever, but the next big thing, since the Big 12 is just, I am never going to believe that the Big 12 is going to expand ever again until it actually confirms it with an official release, because we've been down that road too many times. So the next big thing is, what does OU do? Or what does Texas do? They're the only ones other than OU that can kind of serve as the canary in the coal mine here. And if the rumors ever get really serious about OU, then it's time to start paying attention, because a lot is about to happen. But until then, it's just minor Wichita State level stuff.
Okay, I'm sure Wichita State appreciates that. They had their doubleheader with Missouri rained out today in softball. Let's do baseball real quick here, Bill. The Fighting Beezers are now 28-18. They broke a six-game slide last night by handling the Racers of Murray State 11-0. The pitching and the offense showed up on the same night at the same ballpark, which was kind of a unique occurrence for them right now. They're in some significant danger, though, aren't they? Sitting there 71st in RPI of getting even a sniff of postseason.
Yeah, I mean, they've got work to do now. There's no question. You know, we can make the case that maybe they're okay and whatnot, and then they get, not only do they lose the series against A&M, not only do they get swept at home, and they have more errors than runs. And I think that was kind of you know, maybe you need to hit rock bottom so that you can start bouncing back. Maybe that's what we saw last weekend. But they need a very good series. They need 2 out of 3 against Vanderbilt. They need, honestly, they might need 2 out of 3 against South Carolina. Whatever it is, they need to at the very least, get that RPI back into the 50s or 60s before they go to the SEC tournament so that they can try to make a run there. It's not over by any means. But, yeah, they're definitely on the outside looking in at the moment.
I'm going to take the 20-game win streak out of this. And since that opening loss to Eastern Michigan, this team is 8-17. Who is this real Missouri baseball team? Are they the 20-game win streak? Are they the 8-18 or somewhere in the middle?
Well, it's like, you know, if you take out all the bad, all the good stuff, everything was bad. I mean, it's both. Of course, it's both. We've seen plenty of pitching talent. We've seen plenty of hitting talent. I do think the hitting and the pitch and the defense, excuse me, were maybe going a little above their heads during that winning streak. And what we've seen recently is a very stark regression to the mean. But there's a lot of talent on the pitching staff for sure. And I think that's something that you have to. Among other things, that gives you hope that hope isn't over here, that they really could make a run in the SEC tournament and make up ground and maybe still sneak out a bid.
Missouri softball. They're supposed to play a doubleheader today against Wichita State. That's been canceled because of bad weather. It's the second time that they tried to play that. Second time has been canceled. So up next, it's a weekend set against Ole Miss. Missouri, Bill, is 28-23, and this is probably one of the roughest years Coach Earlywine has had because he's not only instead of 14-6 in the conference, he's 6-14. RPIs in the 30s, so fairly safe, but this is going to be one of the few years that they actually go on the road for regionals, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's no way around it. I mean, if they continue to at least win one out of three against good teams and they kind of cover their bases in that regard. This was an important series, this doubleheader that got canceled. This was big just for the pure win total aspect to make that record look a little more impressive, because that's what they're battling right now. You know, last year, I think one of our guys at Rock M noted that the team with the worst or with the best RPI to be left out of the tournament last year was something like 37 or 39. It was Mississippi State, but they had a losing record. I think as long as Missouri's on the right side of 500, maybe at least a couple games over 500, they're probably okay, because their schedule really has just been hilariously hard. You think about all the number of top 10 wins they have and the number of losses to ranked teams they have. It's been pretty incredible, the schedule they've played. So they're probably fine. But, I mean, you just got to keep handling your business here and against the good teams, at least, you know, what is it? One more series and then the SEC tournament. Take two out of three against Ole Miss and you're definitely okay. But there's no way you're getting a hosting gig here, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Did we see a water, or are we in the process of seeing a watershed moment where a basketball recruiting analyst on Twitter might have changed the basketball recruits' possible announcement?
You know, hopefully not, since it would, if it does change, it would be Cassius Robertson choosing against Missouri because Jeff Goodman tweeted and others reacted to it. You definitely, no matter what your eyes told you, you definitely didn't see a post about it last night at Rock M. Did you see a post about it at Rock M? That it was reported that he had committed. But yeah, in theory, the information that Jeff Goodman shared yesterday about him getting ready to commit to Missouri was true. You know, in the 24 hours in between when that came out and when he said he wanted to announce, he's not going to change his mind out of anger or whatever. And that's important because this guy, we can talk about, the blue chippers. We can talk about Kevin Knox and Jeremiah Tillman and missing out on Mark Smith or whatever. This guy has experience, and he's a sharpshooter. Like that combination is not something that any of these other guys really bring to the table, and it's something that Missouri, I mean, never mind the impact of the porters and whatnot, Missouri needed shooting last year desperately, and this guy can shoot. We don't know physically how he'll handle the SEC and whatnot, but he can shoot, and that's a very important thing for this team.
Yeah, the SEC baskets are the same size, the three-point line's the same distance away, so hopefully he'll be all right in that regard. But with that said, how important is it also in this first class with all of these offers going out to 2018 to land a grad senior and possibly open up another scholarship for next year, whereas giving it to a freshman, you lock into to not scholarships next year?
Right. I mean, if it's a kid as good as Mark Smith's supposed to be, the kid from Edwardsville who ended up choosing Illinois, then you're fine with it. But you're right. I mean, this is a situation where, you know, Michael Porter's most likely one and done. Any senior graduate transfer is one and done. So you are... The next year is all about simply restoring some sort of balance and getting people interested and excited about Missouri basketball again. And then really year one for Konzo Martin in terms of actual program building comes a year after that, when in theory a lot more freshmen take over. So in that mold, in terms of when now, or at least when enough now to get people excited and supplement the other four plus spots on the court next to Michael Porter Jr., a graduate transfer like this who can definitely score, who can definitely shoot, would be a massive asset.
Bill Connolly, Rockham Nation, with us here on The Closers. All right, Jonte Porter, it's still gray area, reclassify or not reclassify. I feel like I'm looking at opposite sides of a coin every time we talk about this, but what do we, can we read into anything as to whether he does or he does not reclassify?
Well, it does. I mean, you listen to Gabe DeArmond, you listen to some of the recruiting guys, it does seem like it's maybe slightly tied to the recruitment of Jeremiah Tillman, both if Tillman chooses Missouri and if he's going to qualify and all that. But yeah, if it's not tied to that, then I mean, honestly, my guess is maybe he probably does reclassify. If the only reason, the more I think about it, the more I'm sure of it I get, in which case I'm definitely wrong. But if the whole reason for staying another year is to become the star and do the McDonald All-American thing and follow that road by yourself, that's great. You can do that your sophomore year after your brother Michael is done at Missouri. This way you got to play with him for a year too. So that would be what I might bet on at this moment, is just the thought that he'll reclassify, he'll play for a year, and then he can be the star if he wants to by himself the next year. Not by himself, but without Michael. That's where I'm leaning right now, and I'm absolutely guaranteed to be wrong about that.
Okay, well, it'll be interesting to see how that one all works out. You put up a pretty good piece in the links section. I've got two words for you and your reaction. Quinn Snyder.
Man, great. Great story. I mean, I know there's still going to be a pocket of Missouri fans out there that will forever remain bitter because, our well-being is tied to wins and losses, and he didn't win that many games at the end of his tenure. But what a story it is. I mean, you think about just where he was personally in the spring of 2006, and 11 years later, he's regarded as one of the better coaches in the NBA. He just won a playoff series. He's his status, so to speak, his stock is so much higher. And that's, man, if you can't get behind that or be happy about that, just that the redemption quality of that, I don't know what to say, because that's kind of, in theory, that's one of the reasons we follow sports, is for stories like that.
Yeah. Bill, and then the NFL, we go back to the NFL draft here real quick. You got a great piece. If people have not read it yet, I would encourage you to get over to Rock M Nation about the most Gary Pinkel-type player, the draftee and the recruit. I mean, Charles Harris, from where he was, which was that letter comes in on National Letter of Intent signing day, and everybody going, who's this guy? To where he is now. Is that kind of the Gary Pinkel effect on somebody?
Yeah, that was what I called him, the most Gary Pinkel recruit, just for that very fact. Like, that was, we almost became conditioned over time with Pinkel to be really excited about the big name, the star recruits that Pinkel signed, and then also to be really excited about the lowest ranked guy, the guy that nobody had ever heard of because of the diamond and the rough potential. Now, a lot of those two-star guys we don't talk about anymore because they didn't work out, like Sean Weatherspoon or Charles Harris or Denario Alexander, but there were so many of those guys who came out of nowhere, who were recruited by no other power conference teams. And those stories are just addictive. And I think that was part of the draw here, why we were kind of excited about Harris initially, and then he ended up living up to it. But yeah, the piece on Sunday was about the most Pinkel player, the most Pinkel draftee, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so I just, went through who's been drafted, what position they played, where they were from, and my big bold declaration is Shane Ray was the most Pinkel recruit because he's geographically in the middle. He was a three-star guy. He was a defensive lineman. Checked a lot of boxes in that regard.
Yeah, Bill Connolly, Rockham Nation. It's, again, get to Rockham Nation, read the piece, and go down through, and you're like, really? Wow. Oh, my goodness. Huh? It's quite the thing, especially when you see guys like, Sean Weatherspoon is a two-star recruit.
Justin Britt was a two-star guy.
Yeah, Justin Britt.
Michael Agnew was a two-star guy.
Willie Moore, three-star.
Yeah, barely. He was a low three, yeah.
Boy, E.J. Gaines.
Yeah.
With the Rams. Mitch Morse, from guard to center.
From quarterback to guard to center.
That's true.
That was
my
favorite part of the Mitch Morse story. He was a high school quarterback and as a freshman until he kept growing and couldn't stop.
And then they transformed him into a guard, and now he's snapping to a position he used to play.
That's right.
And Bill, the book, The 50 Best with an asterisk, College Football Teams of All Time, at least in your opinion. How's it going?
The 50 best ones that I wanted to talk about,
yes,
when I was writing a book. Yeah, no, it's getting a lot of good responses. You can, if you've got it and you're tired of hearing us talk about it, go review it on Amazon to help other people determine whether it's for them or not. I hope it is, because it is – It was a labor of love for a long time, and I think the response is what I was hoping for.
Yep, it's a fun read as well, folks, and it's really kind of cool. You mentioned a couple different times about the coaching trees as you follow that thing through as well. Bill, thank you for the time, man. I really do appreciate it. Have a great rest of the week. Try to stay dry.
Thank you.
You are very welcome. Bill Connolly, Rock Am Nation. We'll be right back. More of the closers right after this.
Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
Fortuzzo, but Colin Wilson does a good job to get it out.
Yeah, good job by Wilson there.
Available puck. Neal with a shot. He scores!
NBC Sportsnet with the second and what would prove to be the game-winning goal last night. Blues Predators. As the Predators score the 2-1 victory, taking both games at home and taking a 3-1 series lead. Blues off till Friday when they will face a must-win situation.
A real must-win.
A real must-win.
A really, really, really must-win.
Yeah, as opposed to the faux must-win from yesterday. Although yesterday was kind of a must-win.
I mean, you know, they didn't win and they're still playing. So right, was it really a must-win?
Well, as far as must-wins go in the category.
I mean, it was a should-probably-need-to-win.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay.
But
should-probably-need-to-win is kind of wordy.
Sure.
Which is what the segment has just become.
Truth.
Kind of wordy.
But hey, listen.
Yes.
The Blues.
All ears.
The Blues didn't look good yesterday.
No. They were out-physicaled in a game that they claim to be physical. Every hit was answered by one or two more by Nashville. And part of the goal that you just heard from Neil from the Predators was the result of a giveaway by the Blues. That was the second goal, and he went top shelf right side, glove side on, stick side on Jake Allen, who looked surprised, just stunned.
That's not a shot you see in the NHL a lot. I mean, when you're by yourself, there's almost like a line change going on behind him.
Mm-hmm.
It was one on two and a half. There was another guy coming down the boards on the far side, and he kind of had two guys in front of him, and he just kind of circled kind of 360, 270 around. And just kind of threw it
at the
like
net.
He just kind of, you could see he kind of gathered it up on the stick and he just kind of threw it at the net. And yeah, Allen was not ready and he hit something a little bigger than the size of your mm-hmm. fist above stick side pad on Jake Allen in the top corner of the post. And that was the game winner.
Yeah, 13:03 to go in that third period. And prior to that, the Predators had scored on a power play goal. It was a slop fest in the middle and not able to clear the rebound again. And the rebound comes out. Goal. It was 1-0. Edmondson scoring for the note to get you the 2-1 final. Mike Yeo on the penalties. He has a bone to pick with the fellers wearing the stripes.
I mean, every stoppage they're yelling at the refs. They're talking to the refs, and obviously it worked there. It's worked all series. Let's be honest. Game one, we had one game where we've had more power plays than them, and the other three, they're winning that category clearly.
Okay, I have a wee bone to pick with the head coach of the St. Louis Blues. The penalty situation as it stands right now,
mm-hmm.
the Blues have had 9 power play opportunities.
Okay.
Predators have had 10.
Okay.
The Blues have converted on 1.
All right.
The Predators have converted on 3.
Mm-hmm.
The one game that Mike Yeo is referencing is game number 2. The Blues won that game 4-3. They hung on, by the way, for that win, but the Blues went 1-5 on the power play. Nashville didn't get any power play opportunities. Game 1, Blues 0-1. Nashville 2-3. Game 3, Blues 0-1. Nashville 0-3. Game 4, Blues 0-2, Nashville 1-4. So you've had 3 games where the Blues have failed to convert on a power play. Now, part of what Yeo said later was we've got to make some changes on the power play. Like score. Get a shot. Tarasenko had several shots in that first period last night. Not able to get anything really going. And Peter Laviolette, the head coach for the Nashville Predators, said as much. In the first five or six minutes of that first period, kind of shaky, a lot of giveaways. Fortunately, Pekka-Rinne stood on his head.
Yeah, he did.
And
now, to be fair, though...
I don't want to be fair. It's not about being fair.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No. Fine, be fair. Yesterday, I didn't get a pony. Today, you want to be fair.
Boy, it's a tough life for you.
Jeez. Next thing you know, you're going to take my silver spoon away.
I mean, I could pawn that. Never mind. Anyway, so none of the Blues shots were good. I mean, I know they put shots on goal.
Yeah.
I know the stats will show that Pekka had to, you know, had to stand on his head to save all these shots, but he didn't give up any rebounds was the big one. Because the Blues were so flustered by the physical play. They were so inept on offense of getting anything started and getting anything flowing towards the net that they were either A, making one extra pass because they didn't think that they had the right angle.
Trying for the perfect shot.
So they wanted to get a teammate set up for the perfect shot.
Right.
And that pass was almost always to someone who had two guys draped all over him. So that was
seems
awful.
Reasonable.
Or that when they dumped a shot in, there were no rebounds. And you the only way they felt like they were going to beat this guy was with a bouncy puck. A bouncing rebound, an out-of-position defender, a piece off the backboard behind, out of the trapezoid that bounced back out in front. Like that, you could just see it in their eyes. That's what they thought it was going to take.
The first period last night knocked the Blues off their game plan. Mike said prior to yesterday's game, we need to square up more on the body. Well, unfortunately for the Blues last night, it was the Predators who squared up more on the Blues' bodies because they were getting knocked all over the joint. And and the one thing that I've seen about the Predators in two separate series now, Blackhawks, Blues, they have been able to adjust to both styles of play. The Blackhawks, yeah, they're physical, but not ridiculously so. They're more finesse, more speed, more get up and down the ice, create the odd man attack, and get to the net.
Right.
The Predators matched that and came away with a 4-0 series sweep. This time around, the Blues, in game number one, started off really aggressive, started pounding guys, got that goaltender interference penalty, and shut it down. The aggressiveness was gone.
Yep.
Game number two, came out aggressive, got a goal.
Right.
It wasn't the first one, because they've not scored first in any of these games. But they got the goal, things started going well, and it continued to go well for them.
Mm-hmm.
Game number three, similar scenario. Starting off well, not getting things going, they get that first penalty. And as we mentioned the other day, they turn turtle. And unfortunately, this time around, the turtle was on its back, just kind of flailing away, trying to roll back over again, but not able to do so in game number three, so they lose. Game number four last night, it was Nashville that established the early tenor of that contest. There were Blues players getting whacked all over the place.
Yeah, and for so much of the season, when the Blues were getting out physical, you know, I mean, a lot of this was Hitch, but even with Yao, when they were playing better, a lot of their response was, Reeves, go get him.
Right.
Get out there and throw your body around and start a fight and get everybody kind of blow the steam off so we can get back to playing hockey again. And the Predators just said, nah.
Well, they've called up a couple of guys to counter this.
Well, and they didn't bite. Like Reeves goes in and starts pushing guys around, and they're like, "Meh, it's fine.
Yeah, okay,
it's fine."
You don't want to shove around. We can shove around.
Yeah, we can shove you around. Yeah. We can go into the boards hard. We can do that all game, and they have. But you know, yeah. When you have a physical team that's willing to lunch pail you to death and just work and work and work and believe in erosion. That eventually we're going to get one through and their goalie is standing on their head. I mean, that's gross. That's a gross combo.
Yeah, and that's what the Blues are up against right now. They're down 3-1 in this series. They need the win. Friday night is a must-win.
Correct.
As it were.
It is.
High degree must-win.
Correct.
On the must-win scale, as they are down, again, 3-1 in a best of seven, and they will play that at home, and home ice has not been an advantage.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a little weak.
For any of the teams, really.
Right, I mean, right. Throughout the entire playoffs.
Quite frankly, I think it was our buddy Mo, who sits in here every now and again, notorious Blues fan, said the other day, he said that round one, when he went to go see game two, that was, at that point, only the second win in 9 games for a home team in that first round of playoff, in round number two, rather, of playoff action, which is a stupid statistic because you think home ice advantage. You know where the puck comes off the board. You know all the angles. You know all, and yet you could only manage 2 wins at home in the first couple of games in round number two of the NHL playoffs. So Blues Predators Friday night at Scott Trade. NBC Sportsnet will have the coverage of that one. As far as baseball news is concerned, well, we've got some weather getting in the way of all of that, and we will get you up to speed and allow you to grab your umbrellas, and we will do that right after this.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
And welcome back to The Closers here alongside Jay Sparks. I'm George Young. 442-8255 is the phone number here if you'd like to chime on in here on a rather wet Wednesday. Something we were hashing about off air. high school football gets started here soon. In August. So we got a lot coming up here. You're going to get on KFRU, you're going to get a Columbia High School football game of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you on KLIK, once again, we are going to be carrying Jay's football.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's
and your namesake.
Yes, exactly. Jay with the Jays.
Yes.
We've done it for 4 years. This will be our fifth season together, and me.
Yep.
And I think it'll be great. You got to start making plans for. You know, you go on that semester schedule, come April, May, you got to start making plans for August, September real quick because summers move real fast around here. And it'll be interesting to get back into a little Friday night lights. Might be some interest in area high school basketball this year, too.
Yeah, we'll see how that all goes. But that's, that's coming up in August. I think it's the second week of August.
Oh, geez.
Is when all the fun and games begin on a Thursday night. And I know that first game for Jeff City will be at McClure North.
Mm-hmm.
That has a delightful start time of 4:15.
Right. That makes sense.
Why? Because.
Right.
So that'll be that. So and here on the Closers, you know what you'll get? The first high school football game of the year.
Right.
and that'll probably lead right up into that first game of the week for KFRU. So that'll be a very interesting first week, and you get a double dip of high school football here.
Yeah.
Instead of us just yammering about high school football.
Right. We get to yammer about things that are actually happening right in front of us.
Yeah. Yeah. So that'll be kind of interesting. We are going to bring back our Friday Night Fever, which is in partnership with KOMU. We look at some of the top games in the area, which includes Columbia, Jefferson City, Harrisburg, Blair Oaks, the Lake area. So we've got that coming up as well. So that's going to be that's something that we're really excited about and looking forward to because, you know, the other part about this?
Mm-hmm.
We get to go on the road.
Yeah.
We get to pack up this lovely and delightful show and take it on the road.
Hey, we don't have to go to Arkansas this year.
Which, you know what that means?
I don't have to drive back in the rain?
Yeah!
Man! Holy cow.
Man, that's a win all the way around, isn't it?
Goodness.
Yeah.
Good night.
Yeah.
Although the way the weather's been out right now, I have no idea. I've got my fill of driving in the rain.
Yeah, boy, ain't that the truth right now.
Be careful. Yeah, seriously. If you see a roadway with any kind of water up next to it or on it anywhere, please be careful. Don't be out there being crazy on the road.
And going, hey, my car's high enough.
Right.
Because you know what all the water has to do is either float your car.
Yep.
And that doesn't take a lot.
Right.
Or go over the top of your exhaust.
Yep.
In which case, your engine will not run anymore.
Yeah.
It's a thing called back pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And then your car will float.
Physics.
Yeah. Physics. We'll talk physics tomorrow.
Yeah?
Here on the show.
Okay.
We have going to be joining us tomorrow on the show. What did I do with my piece?
Clyde
Knipp.
Yeah.
From the World of Outlaws. They are making their return to Sedalia, first time in, this is 2017, 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be at Sedalia at State Fair Speedway coming up this weekend. So we're going to visit with Clyde Knipp from California, by the way. Missouri.
Yeah.
California, Missouri. Not the state, but the very town. So we will visit with him tomorrow in the 4 o'clock hour. Also in the 4 o'clock hour tomorrow will be Joe Vazzelli and our official exit interview with Jessica Keller tomorrow. Former Columbia Cougar women's basketball coach. She's moving over to Illinois State. 442-8255 is the phone number. And good afternoon. You're on the Closers.
Yes, I was wondering if you have any idea if the Cardinals are playing or not.
The Cardinals are not playing tonight. That has been postponed.
It has been. Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot.
Yep. You're welcome. Yeah. No makeup date has been scheduled for that. I was kind of waiting to see what was going to go on with the Royals, but they are, much to your delight, Jay, still on schedule.
Excellent.
7:15 start time.
Excellent. Very good.
Pelfrey and Carnes.
Yes.
And you will be watching?
No.
A movie.
I'll be playing with my kids.
Are you? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You're going to play Find the $20 Bill?
No.
No.
I don't have a $20 bill.
Oh. Never mind.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not a good game then, huh?
No.
No.
Okay. No, not really. I mean, it's a long game.
Well, it's about keeping them occupied.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. White Sox Royals catch the pregame at 6:30 on Z104.1, and that is Pelfrey and Carnes. Again, the Cardinals and the Brewers have been postponed for tonight. That game has not had a makeup date yet, as of yet assigned. So that's two rainouts.
Yep.
The Cardinals in this homestand, one with the Reds and one with the Brewers, neither one of which has had a makeup date assigned to that one. You could top that off with the Blue Jays, which they had to play a doubleheader on that Wednesday
to get that in
because that was the Blue Jays' only trip through town,
right?
So Brewers, Cardinals, both teams at 500. They will play tomorrow again at Busch Stadium. And that one, at least right now, is scheduled because it's actually supposed to be a nice day tomorrow. So Cards and Brewers tomorrow. It'll be right now Lance Lynn for the Cardinals and Jimmy Nelson for the Milwaukee Brewers. But expect that to be changed up. You'll get today's pitching pairing, which was going to be Adam Wainwright going for his third win in a row. And he was going to be opposed by the Brewers' Chase Anderson. So, again, look at that. Again, it says Lynn and Nelson for tomorrow, but that's going to end up being Wainwright and Anderson for the Cards and the Brewers, respectively. Again, that one is postponed. No makeup date yet announced for the St. Louis Cardinals. And, by the way, the Royals won. I believe their rainout was rescheduled to June 5th. So we'd have to get that was the tentative plan right now for the Kansas City Royals for their rain out from last weekend, last Saturday.
Okay.
When we get just that little bit of rain. Not so you'd hardly notice all the boats going by.
Goodness.
With commuters.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
We'll be right back. We're going to wrap up the hour. We'll do that right after this.
The Closers. Join the talk now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
And welcome back to the Closers here. We'll get you updated on some scores. Again, the Cardinals and the Brewers have been postponed, so no score update for you on that one, nor do we have a time when that will be rescheduled for the Cardinals and the Brewers. They'll play game number now three of the four games set tomorrow at Busch Stadium. Royals and White Sox on for tonight on Z104.1. Pregame is set for 6:30. Game time is at 7:15. Meanwhile, AMC tournament action down in Henderson, Tennessee. And woo, doggies, got a football score coming out of that one.
Late field goal missed.
Yeah, late field goal. A field goal for the tie went wide right, unfortunately, for the Cougars. And they fall in that first. Holy cow. 24 hits?
Yeah.
Chimney Pete's.
And the other two, Lindenwood got 16 runs off 11 hits. Columbia College scores 13 runs off 24 hits. Ugh.
Lindenwood Belleville, 16 runs, 11 hits, one error.
3 hours and 37 minutes.
That's fast, actually, for 29 runs being scored.
Right.
That's quicker than some football games I've been at.
Yeah.
The loss goes to J.W. McGraw. Let's see. What was J.W. McGraw's line on this one? Oh, it was not good.
Well, it's an infinity ERA today. Because in 0.0 innings pitched, the young man gave up 5 earned runs.
Yeah, the starter, Zach Maskell, went 5 1/3, giving up 4 on 4 hits. All the 4 of those runs were earned. Craig Smith came on, 3 earned runs. Alex Anderson came on. He gave up 3 runs. And Colin Burksgetter, he did well. It only took him 2/3 of an inning, but he only gave up 1 run. I'm going to go out on a limb here that say the 6th inning was the difference maker.
Yeah. When the little squares of the and the computer has to reformat the 6th inning square because it's double digits.
Yeah.
11 runs in the 6th inning.
Yeah. 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 You take away that inning. All right, we can't take half yet.
Then they're still playing baseball because they haven't played 27 outs.
Yeah. Yeah. 16-13, Columbia College falls to Lindenwood Belleville. Now, this is double elimination. So the 2 seed takes the loss today, and the 1 seed takes a loss today as Freed Hardeman in 10 innings defeats top seeded Missouri Baptist, 10th ranked Missouri Baptist, 5-3 in 10 innings. Going on right now, William Woods taking on Harris Stowe, number 5 versus number 4. And then the final game tonight is Central Baptist against Lyon, number 6 versus number 3. That's a 7 o'clock tonight. So game number 1 tomorrow at 10 a.m., number 1 Missouri Baptist will take on the loser of William Woods and Harris Stowe. Game number 2 is going to be Columbia College against the loser of Central Baptist and Lyon.
Yeah.
Double elimination format. So, and rankings out, NAIA for Columbia College, and softball is ranked number 3 again. Back up to number 3, and they start their semifinal action tomorrow down in Henderson, Tennessee. They will take on the 4-seed Park Pirates.
Grr.
Prepare to be boarded.
Park. Gross.
You don't like them?
Yeah.
Thanks to our guests today. Really do appreciate their time. Bill Conley from Rock M Nation. And John Utley, head golf coach for Columbia College. Jay Sparks, thank you much. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Thanks, everybody, for listening today. And please, be careful out there.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KF.